pastor of the Ogden Latin Mass Chaplaincy. I'm standing in today as Father Simic is away this week. Today I would like to share a talk given in a sacred music symposium by Father James Fly, a member of the Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter in Los Angeles.
When we celebrate Mass, we do not just use anything or sacrifice. We have specific, dedicated, consecrated, and blessed equipments that are set aside just for this holy sacrifice. They're usually beautiful, always valuable, and always set aside for the one task of being used at Mass. So, for example, the chalice should be made out of silver. So silver is a pure metal, it's not an alloy. So brass is an alloy, it's a mixture of copper and zinc. But silver is a pure metal, and that is why when you buy something with silver, it's going to have a little marking on there, 0.999 if it's pure silver, or sterling silver if it's 0.95 or whatever it is. But it should be a pure metal, it's not mixed with anything else. It's plated in gold, and again, gold is a pure metal. That's why when you buy something with gold, it's going to tell you whether it's 24 karat or 12 karat or whatever, because it's a pure metal. It's not an alloy. So this is what is used for the chalice. It's not made entirely out of gold, because gold will bend too fast. So that's why it's made out of silver, so it's got a little bit of strength, but it's still pure metal. The cruets should be either silver or crystal. Crystal is basically the same thing as glass. It's got a little bit of lead in it, but it's a more valuable substance than glass. The linens used at the altar should be pure linen. It should not be cotton. Should not be polyester. Linen is the strongest natural fiber in the world, as opposed to cotton or rayon bamboo. It's a luxury cloth, and it lasts a long time compared to other natural fibers. So it's, for example, real linen sheets can last for generations and generations. It also lasts a really long time. The linens of the altar should be pure white. They should reflect the purity of God. They shouldn't be colored or off-white. They should be pure white to reflect that purity of God. You got it. Candles should be beeswax. Now, poor parishes are allowed to use a 51% blend, but the whole concept of the 51% is that the majority of it should be beeswax. And there's a reason for beeswax being so important to the candles that we use. They're made by bees. Now, bees are phenomenal creatures. Some people joke that they are extraterrestrial creatures. But a bee can, for example, detect demonic presence. You'll be able to notice that. Bees can fly away from their hives. Suppose you have 100 hives. The bee can fly 10 miles away, gather whatever it needs to gather, travel 10 miles back and know exactly which hive is their hive. They're always working, and the majority of bees are actually birthers. Even the queen bee only has the procreation act once in her life. So she'll fly up out of the hive, and then one of the drones will find her, and then she flies back in, and that's it. And then she gives birth to thousands and thousands of bees. But all the other bees are all mostly female. The males are kicked out of the hive because they're lazy and they don't work. So they're actually abandoned to die. And the ladies, they all get to work in there. They're all virgins. And they work really hard. They go and they gather the honey, and they don't just eat the honey, they collect it for the hive, and they make their wax or whatever they do. They are extremely loyal. So if the queen leaves the hive, actually, I don't know if seeing pictures of someone that has like probably beads. It's actually not too dangerous. What you do is you grab the queen, and for example, you stick the queen under your hat, and all the other beads will just come and just like cover you. And it's kind of, I'm trying to get rid of them, but still, they're extremely loyal to their queen. The queen leaves the hive, the bees will go and follow the queen until the queen finds a new hive, and then they all land there. Believe it or not, they're actually peaceful creatures. They live in a large community, and they don't fight each other, which is quite a phenomenon. They only sting when they are defending their home, or when one of their fellow bees is being attacked. That's when they will sting. But of their own, if you see a bee on a plant, and or if you see a bee like on the ground, thirsty in a bit of water or whatever, it's actually not going to really sting unless it thinks that it's being threatened. And if they don't have a hive either, if you see them all hanging up a tree because they're looking for a new home, they're not going to sting you either because they're not protecting their home. If it's a hot day, you go to the beehive. It's kind of cool. You see little bees at the front door of the hive, and they're flapping their wings to cool down the hive. They've got this community spirit going on. So they're amazing little creatures. But being this way, they are very symbolic and used a lot in Christian art, and are mentioned several times in the liturgy. So candles should be made out of beeswax. The vessels should be silk, not rayon, not polyester. Silk is made from larvae of silkworms, which are larvae of moths, to make their cocoons. So it's kind of that innocence symbolized there by the silk. So just from the objects that we have mentioned so far, we can see certain characteristics of God that the items used in the divine worship try to reflect. So these are material objects, but because of the symbolism of what they're made out of or related to, they reflect God in some way, which is a beautiful thing. So for example, first of all, the beauty of God is reflected. These things are beautiful. The purity of God is reflected very strongly. Everything that I've actually mentioned has a certain amount of purity to it. Everything there has that purity. And of course, the virtue of purity is a virtue that's going to bring us closer to God, who is a pure spirit. These things are valuable. They represent that pricelessness of God. Strong. The villain is strong. God is omnipotent. Durable, timeless, gold doesn't rust, silver takes a long time to paint. These things, they're timeless, which represents God's eternity. As far as the bees go, we see intelligence, which is reflecting omniscience of God. We see working. God is omnipresent and working in all places, always working. Bees are loyal. Peaceful, powerful, merciful. And all these things have that aspect of sacredness. They're set apart. They're not used for anything else. And in fact, it would be the sin of sacrilege to, for example, take the chalice from the altar and bring fear out of it. No, they're supposed to be set apart for the worship of God. So all these things have these qualities of God reflected just by, and that's just by the use. So there's this thing in the grace in the liturgy, it's called, there's two kinds of grace that you can get from liturgy, from Mass, from our prayers. You get the graces ex opere operato and ex opere operantes. So the graces ex opere operato are from the thing itself. So the Mass has all the graces from Calvary there, and when you go to Mass, you're participating in Calvary. And so there is a huge amount of grace available at every Mass, no matter how it's offered, wherever it's offered, by the Mass itself. And that's why some people will convert to the Catholic faith just by assisting in Mass, by these graces ex opere operato of the Mass itself. And then you have the ex opere operantis, and that is everything else to do with the Mass. The better it, the more fitting it is for the Mass, the more graces we get out of attending that Mass. So, for example, if you celebrate Mass with a plastic cup, you're going to get the graces ex opere operato of the Mass itself. But if you celebrate the same Mass with a very valuable chalice, you're going to get so many more graces because of the chalice. Now, if you put everything together, then you're going to get so much more graces. If you've got the beautiful chalice and the beautiful cruets and the beautiful vestments and the beautiful church, and you've got a little bit of choir, and you've got a little holy priest, and if you have a really holy altar service and so on, with the congregation all into confession right before the Mass, and so they're all in a state of grace, there's going to be a lot of grace going on at that Mass because it's so much more fitting for the glory of God. That's what ex opere operantis is. One of the questions that might be in your heads right now is the stuff that I just mentioned about the linen and the silk and about the silver chalice and so on. Is all this still required? In some churches we see is you cannot see the choir, and it's high up, and it's coming from behind. So, so coming from behind, sorry, coming from behind, the choir is still very closely united to what's going on in the sanctuary. If you put the one in front and the one behind, you're kind of involving, the entire church in the liturgy that's taking place, and you're kind of surrounding the people in the pews with everything going on in the liturgy. So, also on everything going on in the liturgy, both on the altar and in the choir loft. If you put them both in the front, it's more kind of like a performance in a way. And the other purpose of the choir loft being in the back and up high is that it represents the singing of the angels. So the angels sing on high, and we cannot see the angels. We hear about them in Bethlehem, singing glory to God in the highest, up there in the clouds, to the shepherds. We know that the angels are at Mass. We know that they are worshiping. And so the whole concept of having the choir in the back, up high, the beautiful voices singing, is a representation of the angels, that the angels are singing during Mass. Now, if you move the choir loft to the front of the church, now you've got a slight problem, because now you are kind of performing. Now you're being watched. Now you have to kind of perform a little bit better. And unfortunately, it feeds our pride. And that pride was man first, and God second. When you're in the choir loft, you're singing just for God. The people hear your voice, but they're not saying, oh, that's you. They're just seeing and hearing the beautiful melodies. When you're at the front, they immediately attribute it to you. And the temptation is always there to take that glory for yourself. We are all naturally inclined to pride, because we all have to fight that first instinct that we have of self-preservation. And that first instinct of self-preservation makes us put ourselves first. Now, artists and musicians make beautiful things. And you're good at it. You're good at making beautiful things. So it's naturally more difficult for you to admit your capabilities without a false pride. But at the same time, not going to the other extreme, to falling into real pride. So the false pride is the one saying, oh no, I didn't just write this beautiful piece of music that bothered me, that was set out in my hand. That's a false pride. Yes, you did write that music. And you should admit the fact that, yes, I wrote that music. But you should be able to admit that you wrote that music without letting it puff you up at all. So that if someone asks you, did you write the offertory song? And you say yes, and they begin to insult you about it, you get the exact same reaction as if they start praising you about it. That's kind of where humility is. That's perfect humility right there. So it's difficult to fight pride as it is, but why put you up in front of the church to make fighting pride even harder? It's better to have the choir in the choir loft so that you can represent the angels. Representing the angels, but in reality, what you need to do is you need to actually represent the angels in your own lives to make that real. Very much like the gold that's in the chalice is not representing a pure metal, it is a pure metal. Or the silver is a pure metal. Or the linen is a pure, natural, strong substance, and so on. You have to not just be an image of the angels in the choir loft, but you have to represent the angels in your own lives. And why do you have to do that? Well, precisely because of this grace, ex opere operandis. If you are able to produce the music that you sing from your heart, from a pure heart, from a heart that is actually unevangelic, you're actually going to be contributing to the liturgy, not just with beautiful melodies, but increasing the grace of the Mass by doing, living the part of representing the angels. If, on the other hand, you're living a corrupt, impure life, you're actually robbing the whole congregation of graces because you're corrupting, in a way, the liturgy. Earlier today, we have an officer training going on at St. Vitus this week as well. So earlier today, I spoke to the kids there, and I kind of told them the same thing. I told them, if you guys knew that the priest was in mortal sin when he was coming in to celebrate Mass, you'd probably just get up and leave. Why would you sit around with this? Like, why would you sit through a Mass when you know the priest is living in mortal sin? And I told them that if they're in mortal sin, they should step aside. They shouldn't serve the Mass because they are making it worse for everybody else. If everybody else in the congregation is getting less grace out of this Mass because they're serving at the altar in mortal sin. So it's kind of the same thing that I should be saying to you, that if you're not living a pure life, if you're not living a good life within yourself, you need to fix that. You need to be good with God when you're going to sing the choir. Now that doesn't mean that you should all run to the sacristy door 5 minutes before Mass and bash on the door and say, "Father, can you hear my confession so I can go sing in the choir?" That's not what it is. You all prepare the music every week. And especially as conductors, you spend hours and hours, days, preparing the notation that's going to be sung, figuring out what parts should be sung, depending on who you've got for the choir and so on. There's a lot of preparation that goes into making good music for the Mass. You need to also do that preparation, a spiritual preparation for the Mass, a remote preparation for the Mass. So that means that if you know that you're going to be singing on Sunday, and you've unfortunately fallen into sin, then you should go to confession on Saturday, on Friday, or Sunday during the week, and you should live the rest of that week after confession knowing, "I'm going to sing for the good Lord on Sunday. I should live accordingly, so that when I get into the choir loft, and when I do unite my voice to the liturgy, I'm actually helping convert the graces of the Mass, and not drawing from it." Be able to read music, match pitch, and have a nice voice. But more than that, the choir member should represent the angels. The good choir member should reflect some or all of the qualities of those appointments of the altar that we mentioned earlier on. So, the good choir member should be able to reflect that beauty, especially the beauty of the music that you are singing. Should, and it's very important, reflect that purity. Everything that is used on the altar has a certain level of purity about it. The most pure of is glass, that we say, that is used on the altar. The most pure metals, the most pure cloth, the most pure glass, and so on. These things that are used are valuable. So also the quality of what is sung in the choir should be valuable, should be sung with quality. The linen is strong. You should be strong, not so much strong physically, but strong in your faith. You should have a strong faith if you're going to be singing in the choir. These items are durable, they're timeless. You should be timeless, not so much in your age, but timeless in preserving your faith. You should be faithful to God, timeless in that way. The bees are always working. You too also should be working. You should be putting in that effort in the choir. The bees are peaceful, powerful creatures. see a lot of charity and flapping their wings at the door of a hive, then you should have as well. You should have harmony among you. A choir that's united is going to sing and sound far better than a choir that's fighting each other. It's just how it is. There should be a charity among you. Among the choir, there should be a charity. So if one of the choir members is having a problem at home, I don't know, an emergency or whatever, they should be able to pick up the phone and then call another choir member. You should be there to help them, even though it's got nothing to do with music, even though it has nothing to do with the church. But there should be that charity among you. And there's that sacredness of all these things, that all these things used in the liturgy, all set apart. They're not used for anything else. So also, the choir member should be distinguishable. They should be able to, just by looking at you, recognize, oh, you're singing the choir. You're not singing the choir, right? You comport yourself a certain way. Sometimes you see priests on the street and they're not wearing their cassock. And immediately you know right away, you must be a priest who doesn't have a dress properly. But I mean, he's carrying himself as well in a certain way. And also, like, the choir members should be able to carry themselves in a certain way that that you can tell right away, oh, you must be part of the church. You must be someone involved in the liturgy, and I don't see you on the altar, so you must be there in the choir loft. You must be singing. Now, if all this is true for the choir members in general, the choir director needs to set the example. Like the priest that leads by his example, or like the parents that set the example for the children, how can we expect the choir to be an image of the angels if the choir master is proud and immoral and a sinner? They need to see in you, for example, a purity of life that emanates, that inspires. They need to see patience in you. They need to see love. They need to see joy. Devotion. You need to set the example. Anyway, that's what I've got to say today. I hope you have a really good week. And I hope you return to your parishes energized and learning, having learned something. But if nothing else, try to be holy so you can put a little more sacred into the sacredness of it.